Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you had a wonderful week. Thank you so much for listening to last week's episode. We hope you enjoyed Jenny Pin, and you know, maybe y'all watched the movie. Hope y'all checked it out and enjoyed it and enjoyed our take on it. And today on this episode, we're going to talk about Sinners that just came out April 18th. So it's had time to sit in people's, you know, minds for a little bit. So we decided to talk about it, and it was really good. Loved it. I enjoyed it a lot.
I saw it two times.
And it didn't disappoint either time.
No, it did not.
So if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. It's in theaters right now. And if you don't care about spoilers, then hey, listen to the whole episode. But before we get talking about Sinners, follow us on Instagram. Make sure you rate and review anywhere you can. Share this podcast anywhere with anyone, strangers. Walk up to your neighbor and just tell them about it. Because if they like horror movies, hey, you know.
That weird guy on the bus. Just
yeah. If they like horror movies, you know, tell them about us, because we talk a lot about horror movies. But other than that, let's get started about talking about Sinners. I love the movie. But if you haven't seen it yet, it's about two brothers who return to Mississippi and to restart their life and open up a bar. But unfortunately, their grand opening, evil comes, and they have to survive the night against vampires.
Which is kind of cool, because the whole vampire thing, they kind of, like, it isn't your typical vampire movie.
No, it really isn't. It's reminds me, which a lot of people were telling me, it was like From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
You know, you have to survive the vampires in the bar. Yeah.
Well, I saw it with my wife the first time we saw it on Easter, and she was like, this is a vampire? I didn't even know this was a vampire movie. And, like, she didn't figure it out until, like, you know, halfway through the movie, you know, when our vampires make their appearance.
It is a very slow burn at the beginning. I mean, it tells you a lot of, you know, story.
Well, there's a lot of history.
Yeah, there's a lot of history. But once it gets into, the meat of it, I mean, it takes you in. I mean, yeah, if you're just, like, want, like, the vampires and all that, then, you know, it's going to take a while for you to get there. But if you just enjoy a good story and good characters, well-written characters, you know, the whole movie's going to be great for you. But it is a little bit slow at the beginning, but then once he gets into the meat, it gets into the meat. I mean, the climax of the movie, you know, it's literally just a roller coaster.
And it just keeps going.
Yeah, too. And it keeps going, too. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, that's one of the best things about this movie is last night when you and I watched it, I noticed, like, so not to spoil the movie too much, but definitely stick around after what you think is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Because there's more to it. I saw a couple of people get up and walk out.
Yeah, people walked out and there's still more.
Want to say anything to them because I had already seen the movie, but I didn't want to be like, hey, hold on. Because I normally stay around a movie to see like end credits or anything.
Yeah.
That might be, you know, obviously a hint that there's going to be a second part. And yeah, there was a couple of people who just got up and walked out like immediately after the movie was done. And I was like, you're missing out big time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. Without spoiling it, we'll do our first half of the podcast, not spoiling it. But yeah, it's done really well. Michael B. Jordan plays twins, which was done pretty good. He did a little "It Takes Two" kind of thing. Amazing acting. I mean, from all the actors and actresses, I mean, it was great all the way around. It's very music based, so if you like the blues, I mean, this movie is for you. I mean, it talks a lot about the Delta blues. And, of course, the, you know, Chicago blues, because the boys come from Chicago, then move there, and then they move back. And,
you know, they did many things. They went to Germany.
Oh, they were veterans.
They went to Germany, fought in the war, and then they came back, and, you know, they're kind of, I don't know, to me, they seem like low-grade con men.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're gangsters.
Yeah, they're gangsters.
That's
all
that they are. They're gangsters. They basically went to war, learned the art of war. Learned, you know, probably
fought World War One because it's set in the 1930s.
It's set in 1932, so it had to be World War One. So, you know, they saw the carnage, saw what man could do to other men, went and obviously didn't want to return to the Delta in Mississippi. So they ended up immigrating up north, which a lot of, you know, Southern African Americans did in that time.
Yeah.
So they went to Chicago. They got put on with Al Capone. They allude to that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, pretty much. So after they've gone and learned their trade, let's say.
Yeah.
They, you know, they learn how to, you know, make some money on the side. And they come back down because, you know, like they said, the reason that they came back down to the Delta was because, you know, the devil will follow you anywhere.
Yeah.
He'll follow you up to Chicago. But we know it is devil.
Yeah.
And so due to the fact that they know the devil down there. Down south.
Yeah, they can, you know, they can kind of profit off of it and, you know, make a living, I guess you could say, in their hometown. And
plus, they had a, they were notorious. I mean, everybody in this movie.
Everybody knew who they were.
Everybody down through every plantation knew exactly who these two were.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and every character is really, 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 you know, I mean, just done really well. You have, you know, Sammy Moore, who's, you know, their cousin, who's he's a blues player. Daddy's a preacher. You know, so they call him Preacher Boy. Man, it's just a whole bunch of people. You know, the characters were done really well. Everything was shot really well. You know, you get that really gritty feeling of, you know, kind of a, you know, a rundown town. Not rundown, but like a, you know, plantation town pretty much where everybody, you know, was just working in the fields, drinking. Everybody's drinking. Like
just coming back to the little shanty, you know, coming back to your little shack. And, yeah. You know.
Just drinking the day away.
A little
away.
Bit of comfort, and
yeah, and that's about it. Yeah, so they show a lot of that. They show all the depiction of course, everything that was going on in the South, you know, during the 1930s, you know. But it's not heavily like showing the segregation. It doesn't heavily show any of the Ku Klux Klan stuff. I mean, obviously, there is a part with them in there, but it doesn't. It's not a movie that's trying to heavily. It's not like one of those like message movies. It's more of a movie like, hey, this is set in this time. Here's what was going on at the time. By the way, there's some vampires going about. Yeah, yeah. But it's a really. There's a lot of messages, like undertones and stuff like that. It is a, you know, because you get so invested in the characters at the beginning that when stuff starts going down, and you start like losing a couple people, you're like, oh. So yeah,
you definitely form a bond and build a connection with certain characters in this movie.
Yeah, because yeah, they're played very, very well. They're really well written characters, and of course the musical message too in this movie. You know, pretty much everything, you know, has live music. It's pretty much a living thing that connects, you know, in some cultures connects you to, you know, the past and the present and the future. It connects you to your ancestors. It connects you to everything. And that's what they show at the beginning of the movie. They show you, you know, all the different tribes in Africa and here in the Americas, you know, stuff like that where they're, you know, pretty much using music to communicate and to, you know, kind of form a bond with not just nature, but the spiritual world as well. And so that's a big point in the movie, especially with Preacher Boy being a very blues, like he loves the blues. And that's what one of the big points in the movie is that his pretty much love for the blues is what becomes the drawer of evil.
Yeah, that's why he is, you know, well, that and the fact that he obviously is a preacher's son.
Yeah.
It comes down to the fact that, you know, his spiritual outlet, because his father, you can tell, is not approving of the fact that he wants to be a musician.
Yeah.
Blues musician or not, he does not like the fact. So his older cousins, Smoke and Stack, gift him this guitar.
Yeah.
So...
It's a steel guitar. It's, you know.
Yeah, and I think they probably gave it to him, you know, learn to play. So when they come home, they're obviously looking for him because, you know, it's a small community. It's tight-knit. Everybody works in the fields together every day. Everybody knows. If somebody knows how to play guitar, they're going to find him out. So they go to Sammy, and they obviously want Sammy to play at this juke joint.
Yeah.
That they're getting ready to open.
By the way, I guess this is the point where there will be spoilers in this now. So go check out the movie before you listen to this part of the podcast. But if you don't care, hey, we're going to get into the meat of this movie because we enjoyed it a lot. So go ahead, man. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no big deal.
Just wanted to warn people.
Yeah. So they basically go through and they acquire him, and he's gone through now. He's done all of his work. He's met his quota before the movie basically even started.
Yeah, he was up early.
He was up before the sun even came up.
Yeah.
Meet his quota for the cotton he had to pick that day so that he could go and he could do this.
Yeah.
So he goes through and he gets back to the house and he's looking for his guitar. Well, he can't find his guitar. It's supposed to be under the bed. It's not there.
Yeah.
So he goes to try and find his guitar. Well, lo and behold, his dad's taking it to church.
Yeah, because he's the preacher. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got the guitar right there by the, you know, the side of the.
The stage, pretty much. Yeah,
the stage, like, whatever you call it, the podium.
The altar, or the podium.
So he's got it right there, and of course, dad's, you know, shoot, it's, you know, trying to talk to him about, you know, Jesus, and hey, you know, recite that Bible verse to me. And so Sammy's like, hey, I'm going to show you, I'm going to close the Bible, and I'm going to recite the verse.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to grab my guitar and be on my way.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what happens, and then he goes out front, and this is when really the family dynamic of Smoke and Stack are introduced.
Yeah.
Before this, they're conniving little gangsters, and, you know, they're brokering for this old sawmill that they purchased off, you know, some
old white man.
Old Klansman.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know he was a Klansman.
Oh, they knew he was a Klansman. That's why they said, you know, basically, once I give you this money, I don't owe you nothing.
Yeah.
And on top of that, if I see any of, you know, the Klansmen over here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We're going to put a bullet in your ass.
Yeah.
So... They knew it was Klan. They knew somebody holding that much property back then in that part of the country. Yeah, that dude had some affiliation. So, basically, they all meet up. They get Sammy in the truck, and they go through, and they're getting started on their day. Because tonight's going to be this grand opening of, you know, the juke spot that they're going to go through and open. So, they're riding down the roads, and they pull over on the side of the road near this old, like, kind of orchard of trees.
Yeah.
And... you know, Smoke and Stack hop out, and they rush off into bushes. And lo and behold, there's a truck hidden in this bush.
Yeah.
And they throw the tarp up, and big old rattlesnake comes out.
Yeah.
Two brothers, you know, got to kill it, which obviously, you know, not only is it a snake, and, you know, it's in the Delta, but, you know, obviously on top of that, it has its spiritual significance.
Yeah, it's a...
It's a serpent.
Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of like the temptation.
And it's guarding beer.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So Stack grabs one bottle of beer, and they pretty much, due to the fact that the old Klansman that they bought the mill from has made them late, they're going to split up so that they can get everything that needs to be done this day done.
Yeah, because the grand opening of their new place is going to be, you know, that night, that Saturday night. Yeah, it's going to be the spot to be at, you know. If you're a hardworking person and you need to let loose, this is the place to be.
Yep, you had a tough week in the fields and you want to just let loose, that's where you're going to go.
Yeah.
So they split ways, and Smoke leaves in the truck.
Yeah.
Because he's got some people he's got to go visit.
Yeah.
And obviously, so do Sammy and Stack. So Sammy and Stack are rolling, and Stack hasn't heard of Sammy play.
Yeah.
So he's kind of ribbing him, you know, oh, man, you know, so, you know, you're blues man, da-da, you know, just talking to him. And so Sammy's like, yeah. So Stack's like, oh, well, play me something. So Sammy grabs a guitar, and he starts, and... he, like, hits these chords, and he just goes into it. And for me, it wasn't, like, the playing. That was, like, the intriguing part about Sammy.
Yeah.
That drew me in. But it's that voice.
Yeah, his voice is very deep. I think
that voice, oh, it's deep. It's soulful. Like, you know, for a young kid, like, 18, 19 years old, that kid sounds like he's seen a whole lot of crap.
Yeah.
So he lets loose, and Stack's just blown away.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, shit. You know, like, this guy's going, like, man...
He's playing at the
he played at my juke joint, but not only is he gonna play, but, like, you know, this guy gonna make me a lot of money.
Yeah,
like, because that's, you know, that's a point. So they go through and they go to a train station.
Yeah,
and he's not really sure what he's doing at the train station, but they hop out, and of course Stack's got a plan. So Smoke walks down to the end of the station by the train. And looks over to his left, and you're introduced to a character by the name of Slim.
Yeah.
Slim is an old Delta blues man. He looks like Sammy's voice sounds.
Yeah.
You know, he's like 1,000 years old, and he looked like he got a straight razor tucked up in his cheek, and he'll cut you.
Yeah.
So he's like, ah, yeah. He's
playing a harmonica.
He's playing a harmonica. So Sammy, being naive as he is, because, you know, there's a preacher boy, he ain't really been off the plantation too much. He's like, oh, yeah, let me pull my guitar around and, like, get this session going. Slim ain't having that.
Nah.
Slim's like, nah.
It's my territory.
Yeah, this is my territory, boy. Keep moving. You know, like, you don't play on my spot unless I allow you.
Yeah.
So, obviously, now the bartering comes into effect. Because once you hear Slim, you know that Sammy's got to be playing with Slim.
Yeah.
So, you know, starts up with the money. And, you know, Stack, I give you, you know, $20 tonight. And Slim's like, hell no, I got my gig that I do every Saturday night, and I ain't going with you.
Yeah.
Because you're going to pay me $20 tonight, but then four weeks from now, when your money starts drying up, you ain't fixing to have me every single Saturday night.
Yeah.
So this place I've been playing for 8 years, they're going to pay me. So, of course, Stack, being the man that he is, he's got to sweeten the deal. So $40 a night, and lo and behold, look what I happen to have. So he pops the top off of a beer.
Yeah.
Now, beer down south was hard as hell to come by.
Yeah.
You could get, like, you know, like rot gut, you know,
corn liquor,
grain alcohol, liquor. But you weren't getting hops and wheat. No, that was like a northern thing.
Yeah.
So minute, you know, Slim sees this, he's like, oh man, is that a beer?
Yeah.
So Stack's like,
It ain't just any beer though.
So yeah. So it's Irish beer. So yeah. He acts like he takes a swig. And then he's like, he holds it out. And basically he tells Slim, you sign on with me, you get $40 a week. And on top of that, you get all the beer you can drink. Now Slim's a straight alcoholic. Yeah. So Slim's like, oh dude, free drink, free tab, and money? Yeah. So he signed on.
Yeah.
Well, as he's doing that, you know, Sammy isn't in on the bartering. So Sammy's kind of, you know, goofing off, seeing what's going on. Because like I said, this is really probably the first time he's been around. So he sees this lady in a sundress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, oh, man, he's taken aback. So he's trying to make game now. So he's like, what's your name? And so this character is like, I forget her name for some odd reason.
Mary.
No, it's
Isn't it Mary?
No, remember the club's named after her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was her name? Hold on, I'll get it for you. So he's sitting there trying to spit
Pearly
game.
Ann.
He's trying to spit game at this woman. And she's like, first of all, I'm married. And he's like, happily?
Oh, okay. I know you're talking about now. Yeah. Yeah.
So he already knows, you know, that basically this is how it's going. And so he's sitting there. Paraline.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Paraline. So there's definitely some flirtation between the both of them.
Yeah.
She ain't too committed to whatever she's supposedly committed to.
Yeah.
And a couple of people in this movie really aren't. But
he's like, are you, you know, are you? Oh, and she's like, I'm married.
But this is where you come to meet the chicks, apparently. Meet
the
loose lips, right? Because at the same time, you see a white woman, which is really weird for, you know, because it was the colored train station. It was the colored side of the tracks.
Yeah.
And so they're standing there, and there's a white woman. Well, she looks at Stack.
Yeah.
She like focuses on Stack. So this shakes Sammy because Sammy's like, dude, walks up and he's like, there's a white woman looking at you. And then Stack's like, no, don't look at her. Don't look at her. Just like walk away. And so lo and behold, she comes up and obviously she knows Stack from the past.
Yeah, they've had a fling and this.
Her and Stack, yeah. Pretty much her mother, she reveals that her mother's just passed.
Yeah.
And that her mother was, I'm not sure if it was like a pseudo midwife or what the story was, but Stack and Smoke's mother died during childbirth.
And Smoke had killed their father because he was beating them.
Yeah.
And so her mom raised them.
Raised them like they were her own.
Yeah.
So, long story short.
Yeah, and they grew up together pretty much, and she loved Stack, and Stack loved her. But Stack is acting like he doesn't want anything to do with her. I guess, because he feels like he can't be the man that she needs, or that he's pretty much just because he's not a drifter, but he's a gangster. He can't protect her. Like, he doesn't want her to be in danger pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's why he's acting like
the life he chose to live is definitely not, you know, conducive of having a stable relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm moving to Chicago to move to work with Al Capone. Don't worry about it, baby. Just come on home whenever you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get that whole backstory right there on the train, you know, on the train platform. And then.
Yeah, they pretty much part ways because, you know, Stack is
you
like.
You got work to do. Stack is like, hey, we got opening in like 8 hours. We've got stuff we got to do. So Slim, Stack, Sammy, they all pile into the car and boom, they're about their merry way.
It's a nice little car too, man. I liked it.
Oh yeah. Little red.
Yeah.
Little red number with the little flaps to open up to get the engine. So they're doing that, and then you cut into what Smoke's been doing.
Yeah.
So Smoke pulls up at, you know,
general store pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it's pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Owned by an Asian family with, you know.
The Chows.
Yeah, thick Southern accents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, and I, and that's what I liked about this movie is they portrayed it in a way of, you know, it's not about a race thing. It's a cultural thing because the Asian family, they have hard Southern accents. They speak with a Southern accent. And you would think, like, oh, they're going to have, like, you know, of course, the typical, like, Asian accent, you know, speaking English, you know, with a thick Asian accent. No, they speak with a thick Southern accent, you know.
They sound more country than some of the African-American people in the movie.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, yeah, Henry comes off, like, real strong with that accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grace, his wife, but I guess that's also because, you know, she's a bit more refined, I would say.
Yeah, she has a little bit of a Southern accent, yeah, too, but it's not too thick like her husband.
Dude, Henry throws it on there, man. So.
And their daughter, too. Their daughter has a thick, you know, Southern accent.
That's daddy's girl right
there. Yeah. But so, yeah, and that's what I liked about it, is it wasn't about a race thing. It was just more of a cultural thing. Hey, man, we're all around each other. This is the way we speak.
We're like, all down in the Delta. That's, you know, that's...
We're all poor and struggling. Well, except for the general store owners. They're not struggling, really. They, you know, they have nice clothes on. They're, you know, selling to high-end white folk.
Yeah, they're very well-dressed. Yeah. But the white folk are on the other side of the street, remember.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because remember, he's got to go... They have the two stores. They own both sides of the street.
That's right. They have a store on the rich side.
So
which,
Grace, the wife, runs the white side. And maybe that's why, you know, Henry's accent is so strong.
Yeah.
Because he's on the African-American side.
Yeah.
So they just say, you know, Smoke parks his truck. And, man, it's filled to the brim with beer. It's covered with a tarp. Like, that's going to protect something. So he sees a young lady sitting out front. He's like, hey, girl, you want to make some money? So she's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, listen, you know, you sit behind the wheel of this truck. You see anybody messing with my truck, you honk the horn.
Yeah. And he's going to pay her, was it, 15 cents a minute?
A minute.
Yeah.
But 25.
Oh, yeah.
25. Remember, 25. He had to renegotiate because they're hustlers.
Yeah. He was teaching her
how to negotiate.
Yeah.
Don't give your goods away for free, basically. Yeah. So he goes inside to start bartering with Henry, you know, telling him, I need this. I need catfish for 150 people. I need XXX.
I need, some more liquor, some more beer, you know, just in case they run out of their
stuff. And wait a minute, talking about beer. Bam, 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 bam. Here comes the horn.
Yeah, so he goes out there. Two dudes out there, you know, looking.
Oh, and she's a straight rat. I'm sorry, dude. The no snitching policy had no effect on this girl.
That's what she was getting paid for.
Yeah, she getting paid, man. But still, man, she should have gone inside and got her a slice of cheese. So she's rat, man. She like... So, dude, and here's the point that shows even more that she's a rat. So, he goes through, so, Smoke, hey, you're taking Smoke's stuff. So, Smoke pulls out his gun. Old boy is right there taking the beer out the back. Bam, shoots him right in the ass. The younger one is on the other side, so he kind of tries to run.
And he's like, no, you ain't running nowhere.
Yeah, like, you ain't running nowhere. So, all of a sudden, the guy who got shot in the ass, he looks up, he's like, Smoke. And of course, it's one of his boys from the past. And he's like, dude, like, I can't let you take my stuff. He's like, I didn't know it was your stuff. He's like, but I ain't got no money to pay for a doctor. You done shot me in the ass. Yeah. And he's like, hey, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
So then the kid's standing there, and I think the kid thought he was going to get away scot-free. Yeah. But on top of that, so here's the point where the rat comes in, right? So she is standing there, and that guy says, Smoke, I didn't know the stroke was good. Yeah, you did. I told you. Man, that was the rattiest rat moment.
But he did let him go after shooting the other dude.
Yeah, he shot the kid in the kneecap and shot the other dude in the ass.
Yeah, he's like, because he shot the other kid in the kneecap.
Hey, but he did go back inside and ask if Henry's dad was still like,
a doctor.
Kind of like a field surgeon or whatever.
Yeah.
And Henry's like, oh, yeah, definitely. And so he gives him $10 for each one of the dudes that got shot.
Yeah.
Because I guess when you get shot in the ass in 1932, $10 will clear that up.
That would be freaking great today, man. Oh, my gosh.
Dude, but that dude took that ass shooting like a champ. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So now they've got everything brokered up.
The
so
sign, the everything. Everything. Yeah.
So they go through, and now, once again, Smoke's on the move.
Yeah.
So Smoke goes through, and there's this little
shack. Yeah.
And the end of his agreement, the end of his barter in the grocery store is that he'll take the red sign, but he wants
Yeah, because they only got one color to paint.
This bouquet of flowers. So he goes out and he pulls up underneath these, like the shady grove of trees. There's a little shack out there. And he pulls up and he walks out into really the, I mean, it's not the middle of a field. It's not anything that you look at as like it's being like a spot of observance.
Yeah, it's like, just, yeah.
It's like probably 10 foot paces off of this little shack. And he kneels down and there's a little stone with a baby's handprint on it.
Yeah.
And it looks like a, maybe an old fluted vase or something to hold. And he says, "Daddy's here." And he puts the flowers in the vase.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the person working inside of the little shack, it ends up being kind of like a general store, but for the poor people on the plantation, where they can come and get like a nickel worth of sugar.
Yeah, and she's also doing like, you know, it's like a, oh my gosh, like a medicine pretty
much.
Yeah,
it's like an apothecary shop. Yeah, where you can go in and, you know, get your roots. Yeah, she's doing hoodoo.
Yeah.
And so he walks in and obviously, long story short, the owner of that establishment and him have a history.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, just like Stack had with Mary.
Yeah.
They have this history.
But
where
it seems like his is more.
Well, his was solidified. They like actually had like, you know, the child together. They looked like they at one time they were trying to make a family situation work.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Stack was more along the lines of, you know, hit it and quit it kind of a deal. He is a little fast.
Yeah. Well, no. He wanted something, but he in his mind he couldn't have, he
wasn't deserving of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's why. But yeah, you know, you find out that they're they were an item at one point, and you know, of course, I'm assuming with the baby passing, it kind of, you know, it strains a relationship. Anything like that can strain a relationship. So that could have been the nail in the coffin that made the boys go to, you know, Chicago.
Yeah.
But they were an item, and you know, they're talking whatever, and she's, you know, pretty much doing her stuff, you know, her spiritualistic stuff, you know, talking to Smoke about it, and you know, making sure he's still safe and has his mojo
his mojo sack around his neck,
yeah, to keep him protected. And finally, you know, one thing leads to another. They still have feelings for each other, and they end up, you know, obviously making love and all that. So that's his side of the story. So you start to get the story backstories, a little backstory between the brothers, and you know what's been going on besides them moving from Chicago back down to Mississippi. And so, but yeah, it's done really well. Now back to Stack and Willie and Slim.
Slim. Yep, they're all
they go to a plantation to pick up
cornbread.
Another one of their cousins.
Not cornbread. There's a guy that's working the field. His name is Cornbread.
Yeah.
That's his name in the character. I forget his real, but he played the big dude in 8 Mile. I forget what his name is.
Yeah.
Hold on. I've got this.
Yeah, he's big too, man. That dude.
Omar Miller. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so he's big. So he's out there working, and you know, Stack's coming at him from every angle trying to get him.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Man, you know, he's on the straight and narrow." He's like, "Man, this here my wife, and you could tell she's with child." So he's like, "Man, you know, I'm doing what's right. I'm behind on my quota for today. I haven't picked enough cotton, and you know, this is my wife. I've got to do like the husbandly thing." And Stack's like, "Oh man, I'll give you so much money, you know, some your wife will do unspeakable things to you."
Yeah, pretty
Except
much.
Except he
yeah.
actually says what those unspeakable things are.
We're trying to make a little PG here.
Yeah,
but
and the wife is like, I will. How much you looking at paying him? And I'm like, damn, she done sold him out. She don't. I mean, that man could have, like, I don't know, been, you know, cleaning up dead bodies or something. For all you know,
yeah,
he hasn't even pitched what the hell he wants to do.
At that time, any kind of money was good money. Like anything that more than what you were making out in the fields, shoot,
yeah,
you know, sign me up. You know,
maybe it's not as back breaking as doing that from sun up to sundown.
Need me to clean your outdoor shitter? I'll do it for you. I would do it, shoot. If you give me enough money.
Depending on how much you pay me.
Yeah. I'm not going to just do it for what I'm already getting paid. If that's the case, I'll just stay out here and keep on picking. But if you want me to clean your shitter, your outdoor shitter, yeah, I'll do it. You're going to pay me more? But yeah, so pretty much, yeah, he's like saying, you know, your wife will fellatiate you if you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, if you're gonna.
Yeah, I will commit cunnilingus.
Which is another thing too, and that's what's good about this movie is that Stack, you know, when he's alone with his cousin, with Preacher Boy, and they're driving, he's talking about, you know, sexual activities and what to do with the woman, this and that. Pretty much giving him like advice that, you know, his father wouldn't obviously give him because his father's a preacher. So, yeah, you could see, like, okay, you know.
Never know, man. Never know. I ain't going to go do blasphemous, but there's a couple of churches I've seen before.
But, yeah, pretty much so. He's like, he's down. You know, Cornbread is like, all right, I'll go do it. Because his wife is like, yeah, you're going to go and make this money. Yeah. Like, you know, we got to eat too. So he's the bouncer now of the bar.
Of the juke joint.
Of the juke joint. And so finally, everything's coming together now, you know. And Smoke's—I wouldn't say ex-wife, but like his partner. I would say his partner. She's gonna make all the catfish.
She's gonna cook the catfish. That's one of the things he asked her when.
God, man, that sounds good too. That sounded really good when I was watching the movie. I said, "Man, some catfish does sound pretty good." It's not good for you. It is not good for you. That's why a lot of black people and Latinos have. Bad like health conditions, dude. The food we eat is deep fried and covered in breading.
On top of that, come on, look at I grew up the same way, but we had catfish, we had tilapia. Okay,
oh, dude, tilapia is like the worst.
Dude, tilapia. Okay, these are bottom feeders.
Yeah.
So, like straight out, there's, I don't know how we got on freaking Dr. Oz, but okay. These are like bottom feeders. You don't eat anything because basically all that bottom feeder, it's like eating a plecostomus out of a freaking fish tank. It eats all the shit and waste matter of all the other fish in the tank. Yeah. So same thing with catfish. They're bottom feeders.
And they'll eat anything. They're like the pigs.
Absolutely,
Of freshwater.
Yeah, you lose your toe, like your toe get cut off in a boat motor, that catfish is going to eat it.
Yeah.
Dude, catfish will eat anything. Like literally, that's why you can noodle them because like they'll eat anything. But... Yeah,
that's just a little side note.
Enough on that side note. Yeah, if you like catfish, we're cool. Once a week, people. Once a week.
Once a week. Even that, I think.
Once a week. No, that's not too bad. Depends on how you get your catfish, though. Because if you get that whole hanker inside a catfish, they serve you a lot of plates with them hush puppies, you're done.
That's another thing, too, man. They're served with like hush puppies.
Oh, yeah. The side dishes are the worst.
Literally, like, just fried bread.
You don't get no, like other things, like other traditional Southern cuisine, like you get red beans and rice. Yeah. That at least is protein, carbohydrates. It's good.
Grains
it's
and
a,
all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good source. But yeah, when you go hush puppies or corn fritters or, yeah, no. Yes. No good.
Southern people know how to cook, but it's very bad for your health.
Oh, yeah.
It is very bad for your health. Anyway, so she's there to cook the catfish.
So they're all basically meeting up at the juke joint. Everybody's getting ready, you know, Grace and is it Cho?
Yeah.
Yeah. Grace and Cho, they're basically going through and, you know, they're getting dressed and they're going out.
Yeah. Everybody. Leave the daughter home. Yeah.
Leave the daughter there to probably take care of the other kids.
Yeah.
It's Bo.
Oh, Bo.
Bo Chow.
That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah. So they go through and everybody's meeting up. Well, then, you know, sun kind of starts to go down. Well, then we go back to... where the real story in this movie begins.
Yeah, that's where the real stuff starts to happen. So they're having a good time at the juke joint. They're getting down. They're playing music.
Yeah, they're getting ready. Basically, they're getting ready to break it off because apparently the minute the sun goes down and these towns, like, things happen.
Yeah.
So it's right at dusk, and all of a sudden you're just looking at this house out in the distance. It's a little farmhouse.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden a man appears outside the screen just like he's thrown from heaven.
Yeah.
Like Lucifer himself, cast into exile. He's just there, and he's got like these burns on his body.
Yeah.
And he runs towards the house. And so he runs up to the door of the house, and he starts knocking. And a woman basically opens the door.
Yeah.
And obviously they're very defensive.
Yeah, like she had like a grew or something.
Yeah. They're like, who the hell are you? She looks like olive oil from frickin' Popeye. No diss, but yeah. So... he starts in on this diatribe. Oh, man, the Comanches. These, you know, not a good word for Native Americans. We're coming after me. These dirty Comanches, they're coming after me, and you got to help me. Like, they killed, you know, every...
they took his wife and kids.
Every heartstring you could play on. They took my wife and my kids, And
then he looks inside and he sees that they're KKK members.
Yeah, he sees like their white robe and their hood.
So he's like, okay. He goes, well, I don't got much money, but this is what I got. And he gives them 3 gold coins or shillings or shackles, whatever you want to say.
They're
gold coins, but they're not from America. You could tell immediately that.
They're not pressed coins.
No, they're not. They are.
Drop forged, more than likely. They look like they were drop forged.
Yeah. And so they help him out. And then finally, the Comanche show up. And the leader of the group, he goes up there and he asks her, hey, you know, we're following a man. He, you know, he's pretty much he's a fugitive kind of, you know, he's a dangerous man and you shouldn't trust anything he says. And of course, them, you know, be like, man, y'all shut the hell up. Like, y'all are beneath us. Like, no.
Yeah. Back then, they're not going to listen to, you know.
But hey, man, I will say this. They were dressed way better than those folks, man. The freaking Comanche were decked out. Their outfits were.
The horses. These were not don't beat nags or nothing.
That also tells you that these aren't just regular, like, they're not just like law enforcement or anything like that. They're another.
Well, yeah, because back on the resi, like, you know, back in the times when, you know, obviously, like, the people who had the most money had cars.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the elders had the cars and stuff. Not, you know.
But I'm talking about, like, there's a significance to their outfit. Like, they're not dressed like that just because.
Oh, the hats, the turquoise, everything, where it wasn't native. Like, I mean, turquoise is not native.
Yeah,
to
it's more like they're hunting something. Like, they're hunters of some sort.
Yeah.
So, that was pretty cool. But he's, like, asking, he goes, are you sure, you know, like, you know, he's not in there? If he is, you know, you need to let us know. Like, he's a dangerous man. And she tells him, like, to get the hell out of here. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, got
draws down on him.
Yeah, and so he's like, you know,
he blesses her before he leaves, which is really good.
You know, may God, you know, bless your soul and, you know, have mercy on you, because they know that, you know, if they did let him in, there's going to be hell to pay. So she closes the door and she's asking for her, you know, her husband, you know, where he's at or whatever. Oh, you know, those Indians, they came and went, you know. And she's like, you know, hey, where you at? Like, I can't, you know, you're not responding to me. And then she goes into the back room, and her husband's on the floor, and the dude, he's finally shown his form. And mind you, it's kind of like a 30 Days a Night look to this vampire. He has like the long claws and the teeth, and his eyes glow. So he's not like a Van Helsing vampire look. Yeah. It's more of a, you know, humanoid figure kind of look.
And nobody took their pants off, so you can't see if it's like a Nosferatu vampire.
Yeah, you can't see if he's shaved or not.
Yeah.
But
so she looks down at her husband and
he comes back.
He's coming around, and then obviously the husband springs back to life.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got the same characteristics now. Eyes glowing.
Drooling, you know.
Drooling's a big part.
Yeah.
Like, for some odd reason. I've never seen vampires drool, like with the hunger or the thirst to this extent. Which is weird, because these vampires, like, in my opinion, they're not portrayed to have, like, the thirst or the hunt.
Yeah.
It's more like, you know, lack of a better term, you know, I don't want to get anybody excited. It's like the Lost Boys, blood-sucking Brady Bunch kind of a thing. They just all want to be family, come on, get happy kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, Partridge Family kind of deal. So.
But, yeah, so obviously, you know, it alludes to her being turned into one, too. Back at the bar, you know, everything's going down. Now, mind you, this movie is called Sinners, so it's showing everybody, you know, gambling. It shows them, you know, kind of sweating all over each other, like the preacher man said in the beginning.
Yeah, filled with lust. Lust,
you know, adultery is going on, most likely.
You've got very well-refined older gentlemen from the plantation going in and, you know, buying drink with wooden nickels.
Yeah.
You know, because the corn liquor.
Yeah, he just wanted corn liquor. That's it. That's
what he wanted. It's 50 cents, and he's got 30 cents basic American struck, and then he's got 20 cents good, like at the general store, in wooden nickels. And this sets, you know.
Smoke is not having it. Was like, hey, man, you know what? Go ahead. You know, go ahead and serve him up.
Which is funny, because Stack and Smoke's wife, or, you know, love interest, are like totally accepting of this transaction. But
Smoke is like, nah, dude.
We didn't come here like to get down like that. Money.
And this shows you kind of like the hypocrisy within the brothers, because throughout the whole beginning of the movie, the brothers are like, you know, we need to make sure, you know, we need to make our people feel free. you know, because the white man's holding us down.
They work all week.
Yeah, they're, you know, they keep our people oppressed. But at the same time, you know, these two men have came run a bar and now are feeding off those same people.
Yeah, you didn't come to open up a soup kitchen to give, like, the poor and disenfranchised in the fields, like, a hot plate. You didn't do that. No, you came to get down and, you know.
And profit. Yeah, and profit absolutely. Profit off of, you know, pretty much their sin.
Perpetuate. Yeah. Perpetuate the cycle.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny because Stack is like, hey, man, like, these people are hardworking. Like, we need to, you know, they just want to have a good time. Like, you know, they're already going to have to deal with work, you know, Monday morning. Like, the least we could do is show them, you know, a good time. And he's like, no, we got to make profit. You know, we got to, you know, make sure everybody pays their tab. Everybody, you know, is on the dime, like, to the T. Like, everybody's got to pay. We're not doing handouts here. And he's like, all right, you know. But, I mean, eventually, I guess, you know, Stack convinces him to, you know, help these people out. And
yeah, ease back a little bit. Yeah, he you know, pumped the brakes a little bit because he was riding it pretty hard.
Yeah, Smoke did not want.
Smoke rides it through the whole film, but, you know, he definitely gets, you know, put in his place. But then, like, the real story of what's going on begins, and, you know, you get your, you know, you get the performances.
Yeah, finally, yeah, you get
So Sammy finally performs before, obviously, the crowd, and it's a mystical experience.
Yeah, it's very enchanting. It's an out-of-body experience, especially for
him. It starts, and you see, like, you know, these flashbacks and these, you know, it's almost like a collage of, like, ancestors and everything coming together.
Yeah, it's pretty much what they talked about at the beginning of the movie is, like, you know, how, you know, the past, future, and present kind of collide one another when, you know, these people who have these gifts of song, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, when they start playing or singing, you know, it kind of meets all the spiritual realms together. And so it goes through, which is really cool. It shows the bar, the juke joint kind of burning down. And everybody's, like, dancing, everybody's sweating all over each other. But then you get, like, the tribesmen of, you know, the African cultures. And they're coming in, and they're with their instruments. And then you get the rock star.
Yeah, you get, like, some, like, Bootsy Collins kind of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been good at that, or it would have been better, I think, if they would have portrayed, like, a Jimi Hendrix-looking kind of character. Like, that would have been...
But I think with the vibe that they went to from beyond that, like,
you don't want to also take away from the story.
They have Bootsy Collins, who was like funk, and then they moved through, and like the minute you turn around, they got like B-boys.
Yeah.
So it kind of like all went in that kind of progressive state, and then they go through, there's a DJ.
Yeah.
There's, you know, your interpretive dancers.
Yeah.
You had just all kinds of stuff that basically, like, you know, is African culture throughout the time span and into the future. So they're showing all that, and it goes through.
Oh, it even shows, like, the Asian culture, too. Yeah. Yeah, all of the Asian cultures and some of the tribes in, you know.
Yeah, Grace goes to walk, I think, a drink back to Bo, and then they enter the room.
But the last one they show after the barn is fully burned down. Now, mind you, this is just it's not really
It's a metaphor.
Yeah, it's not a metaphor, It's just showing everybody that was in the barn, you know, dancing and all that. But the last character they show... the ancestral, it looks like more of a Norse kind of, you know, tribal looking dude. So I'm like, oh, okay, so there's a little hint of something here. At least to me, that's what it looked like. It could be something different. Obviously, this is just my, you know, interpretation of the movie. But yeah, finally, like the music plays, which he sings, man, his voice.
Oh, yeah.
Just, I mean, it's great. But then it shows that his voice is actually traveling out and attracting, you know,
attracting to the outside.
Yeah.
It's attracting not only people in the room, but on the outside.
And all the good spirits, but it's also attracting all the bad spirits as well.
So first comes the good spirits. Yeah. And he basically, the woman he's been pursuing is, you know.
The girl he met at the train yard.
The girl that he met at the train yard, Pearl Ann.
Yeah.
So, Pearl Ann, pardon me. So he goes through and now she got to have a taste. She's like, I got to have it. Now, you know, husband to hell, like, because for some odd reason, all the married women in this movie showed up to the club, except for Grace, and everybody showed up.
Without their husbands.
Without their husbands.
Yeah, and all the husbands showed up
without their wives. Husbands showed up without women. I don't know. It's like Adolph's on Saturday night. So.
Adolph's a local bar.
Local bar here in Lubbock. Hit us up in a comment if you want like the full skinny on Adolf. So anyways, so they go through, and so they go back into this little secluded room, kind of tucked away.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh man, don't that door lock?" And he don't care at this point. He's like, I don't care. Like,
I'll screw you out there.
Yeah, I want you, woman. I'll do this on the dance floor. And she's like, well, at least put your foot up against the door. Yeah. You know, give me some
security. I got some kind of class.
Yeah, like, exactly. You know,
you're not just going to do me right here in front of everybody.
So, you know, she hops up on the table. Now he wants to put, you know, Stack's knowledge into action.
Yeah, because Stack told him now he wants to, yeah.
Stack told him basically
how to perform cunnilingus.
Yeah, cunnilingus. You know, lick the button is kind of like what the advice was.
He compared it to ice cream that you want to savor.
Yeah. ice cream, but you don't want to like burrow a hole through the ice cream. I don't know, like, yeah. So
you don't want to waste the ice cream.
Yeah, don't want to waste ice cream.
If you're a child, listen to this. Skip this.
So you know he's going. You know she's like, man, I walked all the way here.
Yeah,
and he like, I just want to taste you.
Yeah,
and lo and behold, things happen. And
see, because all Southern people don't mind a little seasoning, man.
Yeah, Zetterans.
So yeah, he. So they
get busy, but then lo and behold, Cornbread's working the door.
Yeah, and he's got.
And lo and behold, there's a commotion.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, so they call Smoke and Stack over. And they're like, hey, you know, something going on at the door. Of course, Sammy and you know, Paraline step out from the room because you know, business time is over.
Yeah,
got to go take care.
Well, first
you
know. Stack knocks on the door to see what he's doing.
Well, Stack pulled everybody over. He done called Grace over to listen to his like cousin, like knock it out.
So, but they go out and there's the three white folks right there.
Yep.
And Cornbread's like, hey, I think y'all are at the wrong bar. Like, there's nothing but black folks in here. And knowing y'all's reputation, y'all don't really like black folks. But the leader, the OG vampire, he's like, which they don't know he's a vampire, obviously. But he's like, oh, no, we heard y'all's music from outside. And, you know, we want to, you know, participate with y'all. We love blues music. And, you know, we want to have, you know, pretty much partake in your party. Like, we want to have fun, too. Like, we have money to spend. We got, you know, we got everything.
We even brought instruments.
Yeah, they brought instruments, which is a banjo, a violin, and a guitar. Or was it two banjos?
Two banjos.
Was it two banjos? Okay. Yeah. And they're like, no, like, it's only blues here, you know, but y'all aren't welcome here, pretty much. Like, you know, white folks aren't welcome in here. But then they point at Mary, who's very, you know, obviously she's white. She's light-complected. I'm like, how the hell is she getting here? And they're like, no, she's family. Like, that's the only reason why. So they're like, all right, well, if you change your mind, we're going to walk away slow-like, and, you know, hopefully you can stop us. But Smoke and Stack are like, nah. Like, they're not welcome in here. And tell Cornbread, like, hey, make sure these white folk don't walk in here, pretty much. So, you know, night goes on. Everybody's doing their thing. Smoke beats the hell out of somebody who... Well, guy comes in, he gets cut in the face.
That's later.
Oh, is that later?
That's later. Yeah, so they go back in, Paraline performs.
Oh, that's right, yeah, she performs.
So Paraline performs, and her performance was just, I don't know, it was strange. It seemed like she was almost speaking to the bad forces that were out there. But there's also, like, sub-story going on while they're doing that in Smoke. He's still sweating the money.
Yeah.
You know, he's taking...
Well, he already ran the numbers, too.
Yeah, he ran the numbers, so he's got all that, you know, figured out. And so he's upstairs, and Mary is with him.
Yeah.
And he's telling her all about it. He's like, man, we're going to be dead-ass broke in 2 months.
Yeah.
We're not going to have no money. And she's like, well, them white folks said that they had money.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't know. I don't know if I want to go back on this. And she's like, no.
Like, give me your pistol.
Let me feel them out. Because, like, if white folks are going to talk, they're going to talk to me.
Yeah, they're not going to talk to you. Yeah.
So he straps her up, and he figures, you know, in lieu of money, money rules everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you out there, which was kind of pimpish. I'm going to put you out on the block, out in danger, to bring me some money.
Yeah. Which he was a pimp.
He was a pimp. And so that's more of the, you know, subtext of everyone in the movie being a sinner.
Yeah.
So she strolls her ass outside, and lo and behold, like a stone's throw. Yeah. They're just sitting on a log. Remick, the head vampire, engages her in conversation, and he starts reading her. And he's like, oh, you know, you seem real sad, little sister. What's the matter?
Yeah.
And so she basically confides in him that, you know, well, I laid my mother to rest today.
Yeah.
My mother died. And, of course, chiming in on that, you know, that vulnerability, he's like, oh, you know, losing a mother's a terrible hurt.
Yeah.
And, of course, the other two are like, oh, yeah, a terrible hurt.
Yeah.
And everybody's coming to, you know, agreement. So she basically goes through and she's like, do y'all really have some money?
And he's like, yeah.
So he has these three, you know, gold drop forged coins.
Yeah.
So he hands them to her and he's like, yeah, you know, pretty much like you can have this money. And so she goes to walk away because now they've spooked her.
Yeah.
Because they've just gotten really weird. They're singing like these
old Irish like sea shanties pretty much.
Like old folk tales about, you know,
Gaelic folk songs.
Robins being eaten. And
yeah.
Yeah. And so it's unnerving. Probably in a post.
But not only that, the head vampire even says, like, oh, you know, we can help you, this and that. And she's like, oh, I don't think you can help me, this and that. He goes, no. And he actually reveals, like, her. Like, what her intentions are and this and that. And that's when she gets pissed off and pulls out the pistol. And finally, she's like, you know, we don't want your money. And that's when she walks away.
But she doesn't give the money back.
No, she doesn't give the money back. Yeah, exactly.
She just walks away.
Yeah, but that's when finally you see the vampire take full form. And
he flies up. He floats up into the air. And then next thing that you know, Mary's at the door coaxing Cornbread to get in.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, let me in, Cornbread.
Yeah, he's like, you're just going to stand there and block the doorway? You're going to let me in?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, no, yeah, go ahead. Come in.
Yeah. And so she goes in and she directly runs to Smoke.
Yeah.
With, you know, the gold coins. And he's taken aback because he's like, these white folks didn't want nothing for it? Like, they're going to come in and drink and parlay with us? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, because he's like, where the hell are they? Like, if they gave you the money, where are they at?
Yeah.
But they're not there.
But she starts, like, you know, playing on his lust.
Yeah.
Because he admits finally that he does love her and that he, you know,
he makes the same admission that his brother makes.
Yeah. Finally. Yeah. So she's all over him now and is playing on his pretty much his lust for her and his love for her. So, and they go into the restroom and now it's time for them to get busy. But again, like the drool thing comes into play. Like she's all drooling and he thinks it's like, oh, because she wants it.
Oh, and in the meantime, Cornbread's got to take a leak.
Oh, yeah. He's got to
take a leak. So Cornbread got to take a, like, 40-minute leak. So Slim's walking past the door, getting him, like, beer number 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
And Cornbread's like, hey, man, watch the door. I got to go make water.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, go ahead, man. Go ahead, man.
Mind you, Slim's like a 60, 70-year-old alcoholic.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
But he's got the door.
But the funny part is Slim's got the door, and he's like, why you just don't piss right here? Like, literally, like, 2 feet from the door. And
yeah, why doesn't he, though?
That's why not? The corner was right there. But for some odd reason, Cornbread feels the need
that
he needs
to,
like, he needs to pee like 98 miles from the freaking location. Maybe he's like, feels like there's coyotes out there or something and he's marking his territory.
Yeah.
But so he does that. So obviously, Cornbread's out there getting ready to take a piss.
Yeah.
And in the outlying brush, you hear Cornbread, Cornbread.
Yeah.
Cornbread. And you see, like, weird, like, little, almost like embers.
Yeah.
Or fireflies floating around in the distance.
Yeah.
And you never see what happens to Cornbread, but you know something happens to Cornbread.
Yeah. Well, they go, what, peekaboo, right, is what they say? Before it cuts to going back to Stack.
Stack getting busy.
Yeah.
In the storage room.
And Smoke tells Sammy, hey, go get, you know.
Go get your cousin.
Yeah. And so he goes in there and he sees that they're, you know, getting busy. And so Sammy's like, hey, I'm not going to get him. Like, you go get him. And he goes, they're getting busy in there. He goes, like, I don't care if they're getting busy.
And right at that moment, the reason that he's going to get Stack is because at that time, in the gambling room, somebody had caught one of the gambling with a pair of loaded dice.
Yeah.
The guy with the loaded dice pulled out a straight razor and cut the guy in the face.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, Stack and, you know, Smoke, they're going to have to take care of business.
Yeah.
So, you know, essentially everybody's in there just beating the shit out of this guy. Bo, everybody's getting in on
it. Everybody.
Everybody's mud stomping a hole in his ass right there in the room. And they just keep stomping.
And then they throw him out finally. Yeah. You see the doors like open, and then finally they toss him out.
But, yeah, he wants to obviously get Stack to let him know what's going on. So they go through, and they open up the door to the room, and lo and behold, now Mary has gone through and bitten Stack.
On the neck, yeah.
And he is just bleeding out profusely. So Smoke doesn't know what the hell to do. So he runs over to his brother because, you know, he's promised to take care of his twin brother.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there, and he's holding on to his brother.
He's like the old – I guess you would consider him like the oldest one, I guess, out of both of them. You know, he's like the –
5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, probably. He's like the more mature one. He's the one holding everything down. Not saying that that Stack was immature, but he seems like the oldest one. Like, if, you know, if they weren't the same age, he'd be the older brother pretty much out of both of them. But, yeah,
So he starts laying into Mary. He offloads, like, seven rounds into her.
And tells him, you know, we're going to come back and kill you.
Yeah, she runs away.
Yeah.
Runs out and basically, like, on her way out, she's going to let everybody know, we'll be back to kill all y'all.
Yeah.
And you kind of know where it goes from there, essentially. Now it's just, well, for some odd reason, they decide, at the midst of now that we're realizing that there's vampires outside.
Well, she doesn't call them vampires yet.
Yeah, you don't find out that, they don't say that they're vampires yet. But in the midst of whatever it is, Chupacabra, I don't care.
Yeah.
The club decides, Bo and everybody, Grace, everybody comes to the consensus that, hey, we're going to close up shop. Yeah. So y'all got to go. Now, hey, man, I just saw like a vampire run out of this sucker, right? And so everybody's getting kicked out. So Grace turns to Bo and she's like, hey, you know. And Bo's like, hey, you know, I'll go warm the car up.
Yeah.
And I'll meet you out there. Well, lo and behold, you know, he goes out to do that. And look who reappears. Good old Cornbread.
Yeah.
So Cornbread reappears.
And they're mad at him because, hey, man, you were supposed to...
You're supposed to be working the door.
Yeah.
Like, Slim's here working the door. You know, Stack's dead.
Yeah.
Because, like, you dropped the ball. And so... Now Cornbread's on alert. He's like, oh, man, you know, why don't you invite me in and I'll come on in there. And I'll
help you out.
I'll help you out. And this really catches, you know, Smoke's wife's attention. She's like, what? Your fat ass been in and out of this building like 150 times a day. Why is it that now you're having to ask for permission?
Yeah.
So they start putting things together. So finally she reads into it because obviously she's a practitioner of the arts.
Yeah.
And she's like, dude. You don't realize that you're dead. And so that's when it really comes down to the fact that they're walking corpses. They're the walking dead. They're vampires. So from here, it just basically goes, you know.
Yeah. Well, because he was trying to give him, you know, he goes, well, at least pay me for the night, you know, since you don't want me here anymore. At least pay me for the night, and, you know.
So Smoke goes to give him the money.
Yeah.
And... when he grabs the money, he grabs Smoke's arm and goes to bite right into Smoke's arm. But Smoke falls down, and then obviously everyone is in defense mode now.
Yeah.
And they realize they're dealing with something.
Yeah. With vampires. That's when Beatrice says, oh.
Yeah. These aren't, what does she keep calling them? The Hate?
Hate, yeah.
The Hate, I guess the Hate is like a group of spirits.
Yeah.
And so she realizes they're not dealing with the Hate, which is what she has more experience with. She's dealing with vampires.
Which, if you know,
vampires,
the popularity grew with Bram Stoker's Dracula, which were, you know, pretty much all of, not all of, but most of the kind of lore on vampires came from. And if you don't know, Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, is Irish.
Yep.
And so, but anyways, but we'll come full circle back to that. Stack finally is reanimated in the restroom. And Smoke's like, hey, man, like, is that you? And Beatrice telling him, like, hey, man, that's not your brother anymore. That is something else. That is a vampire. And so, finally, Stack breaks out of the restroom, and Beatrice pours pickled garlic over him.
Pickled garlic water, yeah.
And burns him, and that's when he runs out. And that's when she realizes, okay, it's verified now. We are dealing with vampires because they hate garlic. They hate silver. And, yeah, so they're going to, yeah. So now they know they have to prepare now for vampires. And then
it's like start busting up all the furniture.
Yeah, so the wooden stakes.
Chair legs, table legs.
Silver bullets, which I thought that was more of a werewolf thing, but
it's still in the lore of vampires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, silver bullets, you know, not holy water, but garlic water at least. And so finally, they go into the kitchen and they find another dead man. And they're like, oh, who did this?
Yeah, because there's nobody else in there except for the close.
It's only
that's
now that
there.
All that's left is Grace, Beau's, you know,
Beau's wife.
Beau's wife, sorry. Smoke now.
Beatrice,
Sammy. Pearline, Sammy, and Slim. Best character in there.
Yeah.
I like Slim, man.
Dude, the whole movie should just be called Slim. Yeah. I would have seen it.
But yeah, so but now to make sure that nobody's a vampire, they all got to eat garlic cloves. And so one by one, they all eat. They get to Pearline.
Well, before that, remember, so this
dude. Oh, yeah, the dude.
This dude's on the ground.
I'm all skipping, yeah.
And then, like, you know, they're like, who the hell killed this guy?
Yeah, because.
So like, man, he's going to reanimate just like everybody else tonight, Stack and everybody else. Let's get his ass outside.
Yeah.
So they open a side door and they throw him out.
Yeah. Like, finally, you know, we got rid of Run. But now they got to make sure, you know, because somebody bit him. So that's when they got to take the garlic cloves.
And this time, at this time, too, Bo's making his appeal to Grace.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Bo's
yeah.
outside. And he's like, come on, baby. Come on. I got the car warmed up. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So they're kind of hesitating, obviously, to give in to him. But, you know, they're out on the outskirts.
Yeah.
And so they go inside, and everybody's got to eat a clove of garlic.
Yeah.
You got to prove now that you're not a vampire. So everybody goes through, and they, you know, there's some bitching. There's some complaining.
Yeah.
So, no, Slim, he blah, blah, blah.
Well, especially from Pearline.
Oh, Pearline was completely fighting it, which kind of made me think that she was one of them.
I thought it was going to be like the thing where, you know, she takes the garlic and then she turns really quick. But, yeah, finally, yeah.
It gets to Slim, and Slim eats it. And he gets, like, almost like a convulsion.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, man. And so Smoke's on it. He's like, I'm going to take this fly. So why do they keep shooting people when it's not working? I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that I found is a flaw.
Well, so finally, like, they kind of wise up and like, okay.
Yeah.
Smoke said, you know, it's not going to kill him, but it'll slow him down.
So they're sitting there, and they're holding a gun on Slim now. And they're like, yeah, like, when he vamps out, it's done. So he goes down, and it looked like he was going to chuck. He's like, he's heaving. And then, dude, he's drawn down on the whole time. And he's like, no, man, stop it, damn it. I've been drinking this, you know, this
Irish beer. It's been screwing me up.
And basically give him mud guts. Because, like, some people at the party were getting sick.
Yeah.
And they were thinking it was from old fish grease.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Because they weren't used to Irish beer.
They weren't used to Irish beer. And the yeast and everything in their systems.
Yeah.
So then they're like, oh, shoot. Slim's been drinking the same beer that whatever his name's been drinking all night. So the pool of blood that he was supposedly laying in, they're like, let's go over and check. So they go down and they touch the blood. It's not. It's just basically vomit.
Yeah.
That. So now they're realizing, oh, damn. We threw this dude outside. Then they're like, oh, man, we better go get him. So he obviously wakes up because he's like, oh, man. So he starts pounding on the door. Now he thinks he got the boot because, like, he didn't pay his tab or something.
Yeah.
He's like, man, come on, Smoke. Let me in. You know I got him good for the money. I'll pay you money. And they're like, oh, how do we open the door and get this guy in? Because he's not vamped yet. He's not a vampire.
Yeah.
But they're out there. So they go through and they open the door. And lo and behold, out of nowhere, freaking Cornbread comes through with a tackle.
Yeah.
Boom. Hits him.
And then that's when, yeah, he's
starts
eating
this dude.
And then that's when
shows up again.
Yeah.
And he's obviously appealing to Grace. And saying,
he's not even concerned about Cornbread eating.
So Grace is just like, hey, you do realize that this dude's dead over here.
Yeah.
And Bo's just like, well, Cornbread is just a little hungry.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so, yeah, that's when you learn, like, everything. But then
everybody who left the party got turned.
So Bo starts appealing to Grace because obviously she's on the inside.
Yeah.
So he starts appealing to her and, oh, hey, baby, you know, don't forget our daughter's at home. Da, da, da.
Well, that's because what's his name? The head vampire.
Yeah. Put it in the head because he can read everyone's thoughts in the brood now. Yeah. So he knows. So he brings that up and Grace is inside. And now that's all Grace thinks about.
Yeah.
Through the rest of this movie.
Is the daughter, yeah.
Is the daughter.
She's trying to make a Molotov cocktail. She's trying to do everything. Like.
So they're trying to basically fortify everything and build a defense against the vampire plague.
Yeah.
And she essentially is talking about the fact that she's trying to basically spurn Smoke into going out and attacking.
Yeah.
Because he's a soldier, damn it. And, you know, those vampires killed his brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, he fought for, you know, he basically went through and killed Germans for no reason kind of a deal. Yeah. Why wouldn't he go out? This guy killed his brother and, like, start smoking people.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the tension gets to be too much for Grace.
Well, hold on. You forgot the part where when they threw the dude outside, they're having a little musical number themselves, the vampires.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And this was my favorite part of the movie. Because now everybody, I had seen on social media, everybody talking about this part, saying that, it was like a seance that they were doing. Yeah. So the song that they're singing is Rocky Road to Dublin. Shout out to Dubliners. Probably the best live version that they have. But they're singing the Rocky Road to Dublin. And then you realize, oh, these are, so you have like the blues, which is also, you know, about the hard times that the black people were going through, you know, during, you know, pretty much like when they were enslaved and, you know, throughout the, you know, early, you know, 1900s.
Yeah.
But now you have this guy who's clearly Irish because he's singing Irish folk songs, which is about when they were struggling in Ireland, especially during like the potato famine and all that. And they were struggling. So it's like, oh, it's like hardship versus hardship pretty much. But like with vampires in it. And dude, the whole number, he's like doing the freaking like.
Oh, yeah. He's doing the traditional dances.
Yeah.
Doing the high kicks. Yeah, it was.
And I was like, dude, that is freaking great. Like the Rocky Road to Dublin. I'm so glad like they put this in the movie. So they have that, and that's when the dude gets eaten and all that. But yeah, great. Finally, we cut
forward. The strange point is, like, the song isn't even, like, 100% like in Gaelic, and they're, like, they kind of made it seem like they were, like, almost, like, no offense to anyone, because I was Pentecostal myself, but almost like it's Pentecostal chant. And it's, like, it wasn't.
It wasn't, yeah.
It wasn't at all. It wasn't speaking in tongues.
Yeah, they were doing a number. It was pretty much like, you know, he's now speaking to the spirits now, and they're all dancing around him, and there's a circle going on. It is very not ritualistic. It's more of just like, you know, hey, this is our pretty much like we're getting ready for battle pretty much.
Yeah.
And so finally Grace is done with this, and she invites all of the vampires in.
She just gets mad and throws out a general invite, which obviously perks up the ears of, you know, because in his defense, Remick, which is the head vampire, the Irishman, he's basically been, due to the fact that now he can, you know, read everyone's thoughts, he can speak Chinese. Yeah. So he's going to talk about Grace's sexual preferences while he's sitting out there and talk about how, you know,
How like she likes to be touched.
She likes the cunnilingus.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's going to tell her that in Mandarin or whatever.
Yeah.
And now she's done. Yeah. That's what lights her candle. She's done. So, obviously, now the vampires have, you know, permission.
They
can go inside. So, they're going to go inside. They're only against, like, seven people. So, they're going to take everybody out.
Yeah, and it's a great, like, little it's a great fight scene, yeah. Like, there's, unfortunately, some of the patrons get bitten.
Yeah.
But, which is weird because there's only six of them in the bar. But a lot more people get bit that aren't main characters.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of weird. But maybe there was still people in the bar, but the main cast, I guess you could say.
Were the main cast. Maybe there were people hiding under stools or something in back rooms.
But, so there's an all-out brawl. They use stakes. They use everything. Unfortunately,
Beatrice
gets bitten. And she tells Smoke that if she gets bitten,
he's got to take her out.
Yeah, he's got to put a stake through her heart.
But to make a drive home, you know, basically she wants to go home because there's somebody waiting for her and somebody waiting for him.
Yeah. which is so, their daughter.
Their
obviously.
Daughter, yeah. Yeah.
And so he's like, well, you know, I don't want to, but she's like, you got to promise me, like, if I turn, you got to kill me.
You're going
to
stake me.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, she does get turned by Stack.
Stack.
Who, Vampire Stack. And that's when she says, too, she's like, you of all people, you know, you're the one to turn me, you know, my dude's brother, pretty much.
Yeah.
So finally, you know, he gets shot off of her and, you know, Smoke has to, you know, end her life. So he does, and that's when Mary, like, freaks out. Like, she's like, no, because I'm assuming they had a plan with Beatrice, which was to kind of lure Smoke, I guess, use her.
I really felt like the reason for doing that was because I really think, in a sick, convoluted way, they did want a giant family. They wanted a clan. So, like, those, like, those star-crossed, like, tormented lovers that both were, Smoke and Stack, both were in relationships that they could never be in.
Yeah.
That they could never, you know, basically get anything out of. So I really think that that's the reason that Mary got mad, because their idea was to go under the, you know, under the direction of Remick and start, like, little happy vampire families.
Yeah, like, because, hey, I got Stack, and, you know, we'll bring
Beatrice.
Yeah,
you got
Smoke.
Beatrice, Smoke, Stack, Beatrice, and Mary. Like, it would have been like, you know, they could have gone over and played Canasta every Saturday night or whatever the hell. But, yeah, so I think that was, like, to me, that's what I took out of it. And so, obviously, like, everything goes down. Well, there are a few left.
Yeah.
Obviously, Sammy's still left.
Because head of vampire wants Sammy.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, he will let you live, but we want Sammy, because he obviously has the gift to connect with, you know, the
both realms.
Yeah, both realms. And that's what he wants. He wants to, he keeps saying that he wants to see his people again. That's what the vampire keeps saying. Like, and throughout the whole movie, you keep thinking, like, oh, he's like a ex-Klansman or something, but he just keeps saying he wants to see his people. So finally, they're, like, running out of the barn. Slim, R.I.P. Slim, sacrifices himself.
Yeah, Slim cuts himself. I'm, in all honesty, I'm not really sure why. It's not like that Slim, tasty, like, maybe it's because, you know, his blood was, like, 90 proof.
His blood was, like,
Slim, sharing the blood of Slim, you know. But, I mean, for all the trash talking Slim does in the movie, I expected a much more triumphant end to Slim.
Yeah.
I expected him to go down with, like, seven unholy vampire beasts just, you know, getting it in the face.
Yeah.
But no, that didn't happen. He slices his arm and says, you want this? You want this? And they all bum rush Slim.
Yeah, unfortunately. So RIP to Slim. But they're trying to make it out. Unfortunately, Pearline, she gets bitten. And he has to, you know, he has to take her out, but he can't. She sacrifices herself. And she's like, no, you just go, you leave. And I'm, you know, I'm done. Like, that's it. I got bitten. It's over. So she tells him to run. She kind of closes the door behind him, and they're running out. But unfortunately, Stack confronts them, and now they're fighting against, you know. So Stack and Smoke are fighting now. They're pretty much having their altercation, and, you know, Stack bringing up stuff, like, from their past or whatever. And their fight scene goes on, and then the head of vampire goes out and... Oh, yeah. Sammy jumps out the window.
Yeah, Sammy jumps out the window because that's really his only way to escape.
Yeah.
It's from the second story. And him and the guitar go out the window because Sammy is not letting go of this guitar.
Yeah, this guitar is
so
that's his.
Sammy is walking across this field trying to get away, basically running towards the dawn.
Yeah.
And Remick pops up and now
slices
they're,
him in the face,
they're in pursuit. And Remick is just, like, basically, you know, telling him what he wants from him, taunting him.
Yeah.
Cutting his face, and...
But, yeah, and then, so finally, Sammy's like, well, my only thing is, like, salvation. Like, I need God's help. So he starts doing the Our Father prayer. And so does the vampire.
Yeah, so does Remick.
And he pretty much does the whole prayer, and he says that those same men came to my family, ran my people out, killed my father, took his land, oppressed us, and, you know, they promised all these things to me.
But I still find comfort in it.
Yeah. He goes, but it does. He goes, after all these years, it's still. So now you find out that he's not a KKK member or anything like that. He is an Irish pagan.
Chased off his land.
Chased off his land by pretty much the Catholic priests of the Roman Empire, I guess you could say, of the Roman Church. And that's what happened to them, because during that time, they were considered like pretty much kind of like how black people were treated here. Pagans in Ireland were treated like crap. They were treated like dirt. They were saw, you know, they were seen as evil.
Yeah.
So pretty much the Catholics ran them out. That's what the whole St. Patrick's thing is.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day. The snakes that they talk about are not like actual like snakes. They are basically like the worshippers of the snake. They are the pagans.
Yeah, which is a good – this is what – and that's, again, the message that this movie brings. It's like, hey, you know, oppression isn't just color-based because we were oppressed in our country and were driven out and pretty much killed off. And there's – I think there's very few now. Like pagans still in Ireland, like,
oh, there's pagans everywhere.
Oh, everywhere now.
Oh, everywhere now. Yeah,
but yeah, I'm pretty sure like for a long while after.
Oh, it was repressed, but yeah, I mean, you look at the fact that Stonehenge is still standing.
That's
a huge pagan symbol.
Yeah,
like yeah, pagans are strong, but I mean, it's just like here in the Americas.
Yeah.
You know, that same nonsensical standpoint of religious persecution followed them over here. Hence, you had the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
And everything went down that way in the 1600s. And lo and behold.
Yeah. Know. So pretty much it was just like, hey, man, we're oppressed, but it's okay because now you can join us. Like,
yeah.
You just got to join us.
Tell you the blood sucking Brady Bunch. It was a plan, man.
It was a plan, man. Well, because Sammy was the only one to connect to that side.
Yeah.
So he wanted, you know, Sammy to help him and pretty much like be like, you know, the conduit, I guess you could say, to connect him between the spirit realm and the real world. But I thought that was a pretty cool tie-in. Like, that's why they were singing all the Irish folk songs. That's why they were singing all this stuff, is because he was a pagan in Ireland who was also oppressed and had his family killed.
Yeah.
And that's why he was,
you know. So in a strange way, different continents and everything, but not while of blood. You're all family.
Yeah. And that's why they were so drawn to Smoke and Stack too, because he's supposed to be like, you know, hey, the devil comes for your sins, you know, because you're a sinner. And Smoke and Stack were, you know, providing all the sin for these people to do, you know, providing the
on top of that, it's the top of a fireplace. It's where fire, you know, it's where fire goes. It's a smokestack.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just because you have one and one, yeah, you put them together, it's a smokestack.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and obviously, like, there were tons of burnt offerings and whatever religion you believe in.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So Sammy takes the guitar, smashes Remick across the face with it.
Yeah, and had the steel plate, obviously, from the guitar that, you know,
lodges into his face.
Burns him, yeah. And then he was about to kill Sammy, and boom, stake through his face, pretty much his head.
Yeah.
And that he's the head vampire, so he starts dying. All of the other, you know, ones who are turned, they start dying. And then sun comes up and they all burn and die. And you're like, oh, dude, that was actually a pretty cool way to, you know, to kind of end it. Not like exploding like in From Dusk Till Dawn, which I thought was cool. But I was like, oh, that's a good way to do it. You know, have them like kind of melt away.
Yeah.
Not only the way he looked when he was burning, his long claws and all that.
Well, even Grace. Grace's death scene was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
How even though she's of like, you know, mortal flesh, like she just the hatred that's within her. As she's sitting there, you know, killing him, it just literally, like, her bones are, like, you get to see her skeletal form.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's, like, melting, like, her skin is.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of practical effects in this movie. It seemed like it was mostly CGI'd.
Yeah.
But it was still done very well. Like, it looked pretty good. So, yeah, all the vampires light up in flames, and they all die. And the next morning, you know, Smoke tells, you know, Sammy, hey, take the car home, go home. Like, I got business to take care of here, because the vampire told Smoke that, hey, you were going to die anyways, because the guy you bought the land off of, he was going to come kill you no matter what.
Yeah, they reveal that the actual sawmill was a killing floor.
Yeah.
It was a slaughterhouse, basically, for slaves.
Yeah.
The clan would bring, you know, field workers there to kill them.
Yeah.
And so now he's like, you know, and he's warning Sammy, you know, he's telling Sammy, he's trying to do right by Sammy now, which is too little too late.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, Sammy, I know you really love that guitar, but man, you could play that in church. You could like be like your daddy. Daddy's a good man. And it's like, BS, dude.
Like you brought him.
Yeah,
here.
You brought him there. You were a sinner. You led him into temptation, and now you're trying to retract that. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So
now one, he has to do it on his own free will.
Yeah.
But two, dude, you can't like, oh man, you got to do better. Well, asshole, you're the one who brought me here.
And so then, here's the deal. Like, there's speculation, you know, on where the guitar came from. Now, Stack tells Sammy in the beginning of the movie that it came from a bluesman and that it was his guitar, and him and Smoke went it in like a hot hand of cards.
Yeah.
So that's the story you kind of are led to believe. But then, obviously, now that you know that Smoke killed his father because Smoke's father was beating up Stack and beating the hell out of Stack, so Smoke snuffed him. So now, as Sammy's trying to defend himself, he's like, man, this is whatever the bluesman's name is, guitar.
Yeah.
And Smoke's like, what the hell are you talking about, boy? He's like, who told you that? And he's like, Stack. And he's like, Stack's a goddamn liar. That was my daddy's guitar.
Yeah.
Which means that it's his uncle's guitar. And he's like, but still doesn't, you know, the lackluster, you know, the love for that music and the guitar goes nowhere. So now you go into, like, ending part two.
Yeah.
So Sammy heads back home, obviously, to the congregation, and he walks
into the
church.
Sunday morning at church, yeah.
His father approaches him, and all he's carrying is really the neck of this guitar. And he's like, Sammy, drop the guitar. Drop the guitar. Sammy's hard-headed. He is not giving this guitar.
Yeah, he's like,
he's
know,
not giving the bridge of this guitar.
Repent your sins, man, and, you know, be saved, and, you know, drop that, you know, guitar that's bringing evil into this world.
So he's getting that lecture.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Smoke's back at the juke joint
going to
war.
And all the, all the
so
KKK
all
members
the
show
clan,
up.
The whole clan show up at the place, essentially, to burn the place down and kill everybody in it.
Yeah, and Smoke pulls out his old war chest. Yeah, war chest
with his helmet and his...
It looked like it was a bar and a rifle. A bar and of course, he has a Tommy gun from when he was, hustling with Al Capone. And he starts going to town on these dudes, man.
First, he snipes them from the tree line.
Yeah.
So he takes a few out that way. And then, obviously, he runs out of ammunition. So he starts walking. That's when he flips open, the Rambles, satchel buried in the dirt.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Al Capone Tommy gun is in there. And he just starts laying fools to waste.
Yeah.
Just, he goes through dropping hand grenades on people.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he threw pineapple grenades, which he most likely got from Al Capone. Yeah. Because I think they used stick grenades in the war.
Yeah.
So those pineapple... Oh, I say that. They probably used pineapple grenades. But yeah, he used a pineapple grenade on one of the cars.
Yeah.
And gets
so
shot in
he
the
gets
process.
Shot.
Yeah.
And so, but then he notices, and I don't know why, because the head guy of the clan had a really strange name, but I cannot remember it.
Yeah.
It was like Bot Soaker or something like that. So he goes through... And, of course, he's still got life left in him. So he's going to crawl away. So, now, Stack always rolled the cigarettes for Smoke.
Yeah.
So Smoke don't know how to roll his own cigarette.
Yeah.
And they, like, for the most part, like, it was a different folks game to get, like, pre-rolled cigarettes. They didn't have. So he can't roll himself a damn cigarette. So he sits down on the ground in front of this old Klansman, and he's like, you got a cigarette? And of course, what's the shot Klansman going to say? He comes out with something sporadic and racist as hell.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, man, So all of a sudden, he kind of starts crossing over.
Yeah.
So he looks over, and there's Beatrice, and she's sitting there, and she got a little baby with her, and her shirt's pulled down.
Yeah, she's
breastfeeding the baby.
Dressing all white. They're all dressed
in
white.
And she's like, and he realizes, I'm dying.
Yeah.
I'm crossing over. So he looks back, and he snaps back into reality, and old Klansman is now, oh, man, screw you.
Well, Beatrice is like, hey, you want to hold this baby? Like, put that cigarette out.
Yeah, so he gives, the old white man gives him a cigarette.
Yeah.
So Smoke goes, and he grabs a cigarette, and he lights a cigarette. And he starts smoking it. So once again, he looks to his right, and he sees, his wife and a baby, and she's like, you want to hold this baby? You need to put out that cigarette. I don't want this baby smelling like cigarette.
Yeah.
So that's when he realizes, like, I don't know how he got to heaven, but he's going to be in a better place.
Yeah.
So he goes through and he snaps back out. And you're like, he going to let the old Klansman live? Nah, man. He snaps back over, puts out the cigarette, grabs a Tommy gun.
And just lights
his last
up.
Act of life is lighting the shit out of the old Klansman. Yeah. And he, obviously, you assume he passes away.
Yeah. Well, he could just cuts him holding his daughter.
Yeah.
And you go back to Sammy, who left the church.
Yeah, left his family behind at the plantation.
In his cousin's car with the guitar still. And that's where it ends. But then after the credits, it shows now he is a old blues player.
In the early 80s in Chicago, in Illinois.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. 88, something like that.
Yeah. And he's playing blues music, and which the blues guy, the blues player is
at a club named Pearl Lines.
Yeah, at a club named Pearl Lines. So yeah, he's playing blues. Now he's electric. Now he doesn't need a steel guitar no more. He's playing electric. And cuts to after the credits. He's at the bar getting a drink at his bar. You know, he still has the scars on his face, so you know it's Sammy. And I mean, his name is like all over the walls, but you know. Just so you know, like, he still has the scars from when the vampire sliced him up. And the bouncer's like, hey, boss, like, I got two people out here. They want to come in after hours, but they want to know if they're invited in. Sammy's like, yeah, it's fine, don't bother me. And in walks Stack and Mary dressed up.
But Stack's dressed like a counterfeit Drake.
Yes. Well, he's like jacked out in like the late 80s, man, early 90s garb.
I gotta take it there, man. He had a Cosby sweater, bro. He had a Cosby sweater.
That's right, he did.
Yeah, he had the Cosby sweater. Okay, so he had a Cosby sweater, and then she looks like Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny. Yeah,
they're dressed for the times.
Yeah, they're dressed for the times.
Yeah,
but they should have been dressed like him.
That's what I thought. I thought that they would have been dressed a little more high end,
But you have to realize it's just like the whole theme of the movie. It's generational.
True.
So as the generation comes, they have to continue. Because remember, okay, even if he was just dressing like that, he didn't have to have the four finger ring.
That says Stack on it.
Yeah, that says Stack on it. But he's got the four finger ring because in hip hop, that was like a sign. So he probably
is trying to blend in.
Was like a compatriot of Kool Moe Dee or something like that. And that's one of the things that I explained about this movie that I liked a lot. Is growing up in the 80s when you had the Satanic Panic, a lot of people, regardless of your skin tone or whatever, you caught a lot of crap for listening to heavy metal music.
Yeah.
And that was like where I come from. Anybody will tell you, I'm white as can be. But being a white kid growing up in that, you were always like the white kid who liked like the devil music, like the punk rock and that. You were like bad. You listened to the devil music. And really, truthfully, like when you got Colors and you got Straight out of Compton and you got everything else that's from the neighborhood that I'm from, you didn't get the fact that was leading to things. You didn't get the same connotation that was leading people to do bad things to each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't promoting gang violence. It wasn't doing this. It wasn't leading to the deaths of underage African-American kids. So you didn't get that connotation. Yeah. But the people I grew up with, we got the, you listen to Power Slave by Iron Maiden, that's completely satanic. That's the devil. You're devil's children.
Yeah.
So it was weird that kind of brought it up that it's all one circle. Yes, the devil uses every type of music. The devil uses blues. The devil uses rap. The devil uses punk rock. The devil uses everything. He's the devil.
Like he is the angel of music.
He's the angel of music, for goodness sakes. Like that's what he did in heaven. So, yeah, it's not just going to, segregate and use one certain particular kind of music to get to the masses. He's going to use whatever works.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing that I did like about this movie is that it did show that regardless of race, color, or creed.
The influence of music is.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And so they're there and, once again, Stack does not give up. He works that grind. He's got that hustle. Yeah. So he looks, and he knows, obviously, that Sammy is old. And he's like, he smells him, and he's like, you don't have long left. Man, I can make it to where you can make, 10 more albums or something.
Yeah.
And Sammy's like, hell no, man. I don't want to be here no more. I want to die. And so then they're like, kind of like we knew you were going to say that, but we had to offer it anyways.
Yeah, because he asked them, you know, how did y'all make it out? Like, we saw all the vampires get burned. Well, remember, Mary ran out when Beatrice got killed.
Yeah.
And it comes to find out that Smoke let Stack go as long as...
He would leave Sammy alone.
As long as he would leave Sammy alone. He had to promise him that he would leave Sammy alone, but he can live out his days as a vampire, but he just had to leave Sammy alone. He couldn't touch him. Which is why Smoke went out with a bang, because he knew that maybe Mary or Stack would come after him. Yeah. So he's like, I'm dead either way. I might as well go out, you know, killing these Klansmen. But yeah, so he finds out, you know, that, you know, they still retain, now that the head of Empire is dead, it's like they kind of still retain that their personalities and memories from when they were human. Obviously they do, because the head vampire knew all their memories. Yeah. But now they're more of themselves now. Now that there's no, like, head vampire, like, leading them everywhere.
Yeah, because Sammy goes through, and that's basically the end of the movie. Sammy goes through, and he reveals, he's like, you know, can I ask you a question? And Stack's like, what? And he's like...
After he plays for them. He plays on the steel guitar.
Yeah, he plays on...
And that's been refurbished and repurposed.
And Stack's like, you know, I got all your albums.
Yeah.
He's like, them old, like, old recordings sound like shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like, but the old ways still sound better.
Yeah.
And so then Sammy reveals that, you know, once every couple weeks he wakes up, like, pretty much in a cold sweat.
About that night, yeah.
About that night. And then he asks them, like, due to the fact that they have no human kindness anymore, how about you? And he's like, yeah, man. And he starts talking about, you know, Stack starts talking about, it's the last day I saw my brother.
Yeah. Well, no, Sammy's like...
Oh, yeah, Sammy says...
He goes, you know, I still get, you know, nightmares from that night. But he says, but... Up until the sun went down, it was like the best night.
Best day of my life.
Yeah, and that's when Stack said, you know, he asked them, you know, what about y'all? And Stack's like, yeah, he goes, that's the last time I spent with my brother watching the sun go down. Like, you know, they had the best night of their life.
Yeah.
And until, you know, unfortunately, you know, the sun went down and all the vampires started killing everybody.
So you had to pay the toll for the sins.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah, and so that's when Stack and Mary, you could tell they kind of, like, are sad because, one, Sammy's old, and it's like they finally have their closure moment.
But she still calls him little Sammy.
Yeah.
But, see, but once again, I think part of the reason that they were sad and part of the reason that they were downtrodden is because the vampires do seek the family.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why it's so prevalent in this film, but I really got just the vibe that it was like a family affair.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, with her being with Stack, I mean, I don't know if them not being the head vampire, I doubt they have the power to turn anyone. So they're probably just, you know, wandering the earth, just...
Well, they could turn, because, I mean...
I guess they could.
Yeah.
But I would think that they would, you know... I would think that they would roll pretty deep.
But. Yeah. But
after all those years. Yeah,
but it was a good ending, though.
It was
a good, like, closure ending.
It was a good third ending to the movie.
Yeah. Which, I don't know if I said this already, the blues guy who plays Sammy, the old Sammy, is Buddy Guy. Yeah. But, yeah, it was a really good movie, man. It was good. I mean, I had a bunch of, like, messages, like, stuff like that. A lot of history, too, you know, especially with the Irish folk, you know, songs and all that, and it being compared to both, you know, what was going on when he was younger compared to now with, you know, Sammy, what he's going through and what, you know, the twins are going through. It was just really good connection all the way around, you know, and then adding vampires to the mix was even better.
Can't go wrong with vampires.
Yeah. And then making them Irish, considering that, you know, Bram Stoker was Irish and created Dracula. It was good all the way around, man. There's so much good stuff.
It was amazing storytelling.
Yeah. And the music, again, blues. I love blues. Probably my favorite one has to be being from Texas, Stevie Ray Vaughan, obviously. But, of course, Muddy Waters and all that. The Delta Blues, you know, are amazing in themselves. But
and it paid homage. I mean, it obviously didn't really give, like, a full in-depth. But, I mean, anybody who's seen Crossroads with Ralph Macchio.
Yeah.
Dude, I was just waiting for Stevie Vai to, like, pop out of somewhere and get busy with. I was talking about that today at work. I'm like, dude, that movie couldn't have been any better unless, like, Stevie Vai hopped out of, like, a box and, like, started, like, a guitar solo.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was really, really good, man. It was good music wise, everything. It was just characters were written well. So yeah, I recommend y'all go check it out.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, historically, it's a good historical piece. You know, if you're you know, the cinematography was done great.
Yeah.
Like the shots of the skyscrape. And, you know, if you don't live in Lubbock, Texas, and you can't see tomorrow by looking out your window, you know, yeah, you look down these dirt roads that they go on. And I think that's kind of like the feel they wanted to get is, oh, we're driving off into nowhere. It's just flat road. Yeah, that's Lubbock. There's no topography. So we can see tomorrow. It's over there.
Yeah.
Hence why vampires can't attack us, because dawn is right around the corner.
Yeah, they wouldn't make it. They wouldn't make it because, yeah, the sun's still there. You look over the horizon. You see the moon in the sky, but the sun's right there. Yeah, it was a good movie, man. Again, yeah, I mean, being a music lover, obviously it was good on that part. Of course, vampires. It just had all the good things in it, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go check it out. I mean, if you're listening this far, you probably already have checked it out and you wanted to hear our take on it.
Exactly.
But, yeah, but thank you so much for listening, guys. That was our, you know, take on Sinners, our review on Sinners. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Again, follow us on Instagram. Rate and review our podcast anywhere you can. Share it. Spread it around. Helps us out a lot. And we will see you
next week.